Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, September 23rd, 2020. You're listening on Thursday, though. I'm joined by Soothsayer and Fantasy Savant Tristan H. Cockrop, who is so good at this. Not only did he win his fantasy baseball leagues a month ago, he's already won all his fantasy football leagues, and week three hasn't even happened yet. Isn't that amazing? Kyle Soppy still researches and produces our fine show, but in relative secrecy, so don't tell anyone. And I'm Eric Carabell, just days away from avoiding the alternate site, wherever that might be. On today's show, just a few days left of this irregular season, so we will discuss some players, I guess, that can help contenders, mainly starting pitchers. I don't know what lineups are going to look like in the American League this weekend. We'll also preview the starting pitchers for 2021 and the closers. Someone's going to ask a trivia question. It ain't going to be me. And maybe a hash brown or two at the time.
We want your trivia. Come on.
You don't want my trivia. You want to ask me the trivia so I can get it wrong. like the one the other day was actually really good. Kyle's trivia has been fantastic. Give him credit for that. But I don't know who's asking it today. Is it you, Kyle? Is it Tristan? Is it nobody? Is it a reader email?
Tristan made a triumphant comeback. He's going to be asking the trivia to stump you and end the season on a high note.
Nice. What we all need.
Bring it a circle.
All right. So, Tristan, only a couple days left of the season. We did this a couple days ago, but has anything changed for you in terms of what fantasy players in daily format should be doing? I am actually up against a innings limit in a league that you are in, and I'm going to blow a very large lead, it looks like. I should have used Framber Valdez last night. I did not. I have like 17 innings left. I'm going to use him today on Bieber and somebody else, Greinke, and the other guy can catch me. Give me some advice for the weekend, whether it's innings limits for the season, whether it's some, we'll get to starting pitchers in a second, whether it's hit. I can't even think of any hitters that I'm adding for this weekend. I'm not even sure who's playing in the American League except on the bad teams.
That's the big problem, is knowing who's going to play, because the American League's playoff seeds look like they're a lot more settled. Not only that, more of the teams have given indication that they are aligning their rotations and not really playing for seeding. So I'd be leaning very heavily on the National League races. And the problem I have with those is that some of those teams have been playing a little bit less productive baseball, let's say. I'd probably stick with either guys who got you there. The other thing is lean on the guys with good schedules. So to throw you a few of them, Arizona, very good schedule, grades very high using forecaster grades because they get Colorado at home in Chase Field to finish out their season. Looks like we have a decent weekend actually for Baltimore with that game remaining against Boston. And then three in Toronto at Salem Field. You know, that's a pretty decent hitting place to be. Look at even the Rockies on the road, the fact they have that extra game against Arizona on Friday, that's a help. So their hitting schedule grades pretty favorably. And here's a big surprise for you. Kansas City actually stacks up kind of nicely in the home games against Detroit. So if you can find anybody there who's playing regularly for you, scoop them up off your waiver wire, might be worth just throwing them in at the last spot.
I'm sure Raul Mondesi's son will have a couple combo meals this weekend. Do we have an answer yet on Monday? I don't know if the Cardinals are going to need to play that doubleheader because the Phillies are so bad. And if one other team doesn't play well enough, St. Louis won't need to play those games. But obviously, know your league rules, whatever site you play on, to see if Monday counts. One of my expert leagues, I think it does count, and I can switch my lineup. I don't know still about ESPN leagues, but maybe you do.
What I've been told is pay attention to your league's alerts because anything will be communicated that way. The games need to be officially scheduled. And I think part of it has to do with, are they scheduled on Monday, that doubleheader? I know there's going to be an effort to try to get them in, but we'll see. And they will, by the way, count as part of the final week head-to-head matchup if included in ESPN leagues.
Speaking of hitters here, we'll do a little combo meals here. You got the song for me?
Hey, it's a combo meal. Combo, combo. It's a combo meal. Home run plus steal.
Never.
You made me laugh midway through.
I didn't say anything.
I'm dancing along and I'm amusing it too much.
No. You're not. It's tremendous. It's the best part of the show is you're singing, frankly. We got a bunch of them on Tuesday. Austin Slater, I know you all have him rostered. Willie Adames, who's been having a terrible September. I wrote the other day, Wander Franco should have been recalled a couple weeks ago. And then that day, Willie Adames has a combo meal. Michael Brantley and Juan Soto on Tuesday. I'm happy to say I watched that game, both those games, and Juan Soto was really good. Juan Soto leads the major leagues in OPS, and he can steal a base. He's a you can argue he's a top five guy next year. I'm going to do my top 10 or top 20 in a blog coming up soon. And, man, I look, there's a lot of talk. I have a league in which I could have taken – a fantasy league. I could have taken Juan Soto or Fernando Tatis with the first pick. It was like a dispersal draft. And I thought it was obvious. Remember, this was back in January. I thought it was obvious to take Soto. If you could do that now, Soto or Tatis in a keeper fantasy league, who would you take?
And it's traditional Roto?
It is.
Actually, I think I would still take Juan Soto. I would, in all of the points or sabermetric leagues, it's Juan Soto to me. I think I would still take Juan Soto over Tatis in a traditional Roto.
Would you? So you're going to rank Soto over Tatis for 2021, you think?
You know, the more I look at it, the more I think Juan Soto might well be a top three pick overall for next season. I actually think it's a damn shame he missed those first eight games with what was effectively a false positive. Could you imagine what his numbers would look like getting those eight back?
I mean, when I compared Soto to Mike Trout, and I don't want to have another debate about this until Monday's show, but I don't know why I wouldn't take Soto over Trout, even in a redraft. Soto's that good. He's a monster.
I don't know that I'd fight you. I don't think I'd fight you on that one. I really wouldn't. Soto's a really good – the thing with Soto is he grades amazingly well from all of the keeper and dynasty angles and in points leagues. 16th best on the player rater entering the games on Wednesday. It's not a difficult case to make for Soto over Trout.
And then, obviously, Tatis has more stolen bases, plays shortstop. But still, nice. Those are the combo meals for the last couple of days since our last show. Adamas.
Hey, by the way.
Yeah.
You got to go back to your Adamas versus Wander Franco, because Franco was one of the prospects. By the way, also Andrew Vaughn of the White Sox put on the postseason player pools. They're the 40-man player pools that cover the 28-man active rosters that teams will have. Interesting.
They could debut in the playoffs.
Yes. That's why.
And why wouldn't they? Like, I understand the White Sox because they have a first baseman and a DH. But why, if you're the Rays, why isn't Wander Franco playing shortstop or third base for you now?
Oh, I know
why. Adamas struck. It can't be because of the roster and because of money. You have a shot to win the World Series, Tampa Bay, and Wander Franco is not going to be up for arbitration. You're going to sign him to a long term contract. That's not why. I can't see the sun.
I think it actually is. You do not charge service time for postseason play. So Wander Franco, by not being called up to the roster by Sunday, does not accrue any service time whatsoever this year.
Sneaky.
But he might well be a good enough player to be a regular player for them in the playoffs. He might be good enough to play that regularly.
He's not Mickey Moniak. He's ready for the majors right now. He's ready. Anyway, let's move on.
Are you sure? Mike Trout?
Yeah, I am sure. Trout wasn't, Alex Gordon wasn't, but, you know, Clint Frazier, Alec Bohm was, and, you know, Tatis was.
It's the playoffs. Let's not forget what Cody Bellinger and Jordan Alvarez did in their first postseasons. It's not exactly the easiest of baseball for a young player. I think he's a great prospect. But
I'm not saying he's going to be amazing. I'm saying when you compare him to their other options, if Willie Adamas isn't hitting, you play Franco. If Yandy Diaz at third base isn't hitting, you play Franco. I mean, come on. Anyway, you want some hitters here on the most added list. I mean, Jared Walsh, I mean, just keeps hitting. And he's actually forced me to keep him in a sim league. Jared Walsh still available in almost half of ESPN standard leagues. Alec Bohm is available in more than half. Alec Bohm has been not just one of the best rookies in September. He's been one of the best hitters of anybody in September. Batting average, runs batted in. Now, the Phillies will probably be eliminated from playoff consideration by the time you listen to this. And they'll sit Harper and Real Muto the rest of the season. But Alec Bohm won't sit. So, go get him.
Yeah.
Miguel Rojas is available. Miami, again, as long as Philly keeps losing, Miami can keep losing. And the Marlins will lock up second place and make the playoffs. But Miguel Rojas is really good. There's no reason to think he's just going to go 0-for-8 at any point the rest of the season. Jerks and Profar is available in a lot of leagues. Brandon Nimmo gets on base. If You have a points league. So Garrett Cooper, a bunch of Marlins, actually. Although I don't like their – who did they play somebody tough this weekend, right? Isn't it the Yankees or somebody like that? Can't remember who
they do play. I'm fairly certain it is the Yankees, in fact, yes.
But they're not going to get, like, the Yankees' best pitchers, right?
No, they're likely to get Hap, David Garcia, and Bullpen Day, which means Mike King and relievers.
All right, there you go. All right, let's look at the pitchers now for the – oh, there's another thing here. So the season leaders in combo meals, Adalberto Mondesi had four so far. 11 players are tied with two, including Machado and Witt. Sam Hilliard's one of them, even though Colorado demoted him a week ago. They did bring him back, but still, that's ridiculous. What are you doing, Rockies? I don't know how I can ever trust this team. I mean, I joked. Look, I was right. I'm not right about a lot of things. You are. But I told you Matt Kemp was going to play over Hilliard, and then they demoted Hilliard. How about that? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Kemp been a very effective hitter against lefties.
Let's look at the schedule here. So Wednesday we can't discuss, even though they're playing that as we speak. Thursday there is early games, so please get your lineups in daily leagues. Alec Mills is pitching at Pittsburgh. That's pretty good. Anybody at Pittsburgh, good ballpark for pitchers and great lineup for hitters for pitchers to face.
And by the way, because he's not supposed to be one of the three in the playoffs, I don't think there'll be restrictions on pitch count.
I don't think there would be anyway until the weekend, but obviously Alec Mills won't pitch over the weekend. But yes, the Cubs will win the division, so they can mess around with their rotation this week. And that's the thing. Like, you think, oh, Kyle Hendricks this weekend, great. Well, they may not let him throw more than 60 pitches this weekend, or you know, whoever.
Darvish. Hendricks was today, Wednesday.
Okay, so Darvish, I don't know when his next outing is, but as an example.
Friday. Yeah, he's Friday.
Friday. Now, they'll probably play that out because it's Chicago at Chicago. It's on ESPN2. So Darvish.
And it's 4 days rest to the opener then.
Okay, so that's not a good example. But as we move along on this, I'll have a good example for you. Anything else here on Thursday starting pitchers? Zach Plesac can't be available in too many leagues at this point. Ian Anderson at home against Miami. What do you think there?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was looking, was let's talk Ian Anderson. Yeah, the Braves have locked up their playoff positioning, and they are looking at Ian Anderson.
Yes, go ahead. No, I'm just making this. Go ahead.
Okay. They are looking at him as the number two starter for the wild card series. So I wonder how long they let him go in this game. It is a good matchup. Home game against a team that, kind of spunky, I guess we could call them. I still call
not
it
a good offense.
Matchup.
Not a good offense.
I said a spunky offense.
Corbin Burns, ESPN Plus on Thursday at St. Louis. I struggled with what to do with Corbin Burns. We'll get to this conversation later. Mm-hmm. In my top 20 starting pitchers, I wrote it up. It was published on Wednesday. I know you read it. And maybe you disagree with me. We'll get to that a little bit later. Oh, I got an email. Friday, as noted, Darvish and Dylan Cease on ESPN2, the Battle of Chicago. Which team do you think gets farther? You know, I was looking at the White Sox record this season. They've done terribly against decent teams. They basically formed this entire record. I know White Sox fans are going to get angry at this, but I'm not lying. It's true. It's there. White Sox have done nothing against good teams. All their wins are against like Kansas City and Detroit, Pittsburgh, or whatever. So tough to trust them in the playoffs, making a lot of noise.
So which goes further, you're saying, of Chicago?
I don't know if either went around. I mean, Darvish is the best, you know, Darvish, Hendricks, Lester in the playoffs. It depends who they face, you know. But
this is the thing. The Cubs offense has been really problematic lately. September, they're just not hitting. They've been inconsistent. They were ice cold for the first 2 weeks of the month. But I actually think the higher seeds in the National League have more an advantage than the higher seeds in the American League. I think some of those teams in the 5, 6, 7, 8 could knock off some of those higher seeds. And in the National League, it's not so much so. I actually do think that higher seeds like the Cubs are going to take that first round without too much trouble.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think the Dodgers would be shocking if they lost in the first round. But I literally think any American League team that is the home team could lose in the first round. That includes the Yankees, Oakland, whoever it is. And in the National Rays, of course, the Central teams are all the same. National League, you're telling me Milwaukee or St. Louis couldn't knock off Atlanta or the Cubs? They can. They absolutely can.
The two wild cards to me in the National League, and oh yeah, I'm not doing that for coincidence's sake. Braves, because the rotation's a little bit uncertain.
Terrible. It's the worst rotation in the playoffs right now, the Braves. The worst. I mean, there's going to be teams that miss the playoffs. Philadelphia has a better
top three.
I
am not so sure about that. But we'll have to see who gets in those final four spots. The final four spots, somebody's going to get in who doesn't have a good rotation. And the Reds, the team that draws the Reds as a lower seed.
Don't want to play the Reds.
Exactly.
I mean, that's they can throw Castillo, Gray, Bauer in some order. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Milwaukee can throw Burns at you. You know, Atlanta's got Freed, but nothing else you can count on. Mm-hmm. Also on Friday, who else is pitching here? Blackjack Flaherty at Milwaukee. I ranked him well. Oh, you know what? I'm not doing this for Kyle's sake, but Rick Porcello at Washington. Now, hear me out. Do you know Rick Porcello is number 13 in baseball in FIP? He has a 5.46 ERA and a 3.14 FIP. He has the greatest differential between his ERA and his FIP among every starting pitcher that is qualified right now. So all joking aside here, what do you make of that, Tristan? Because he's at Washington against an offense that, you know, other than against the Phillies, can't score runs. I don't know what to make of this. I mean, like, his K per nine is 8.2. That's fine for him. How do you have a pitcher with a different ERA and FIP that great? Luck?
Yeah, that's a little of it. The left on base rate is 60%. That's absurdly low. And he's off.
Yeah.
Well, that's also just unlucky with allowing runners to score. He does historically land in the 60s, but 60% is pretty low. I actually, for guys like this, want to look at XFIP and see them neutralize the home runs and fly balls. And his XFIP is not especially great.
Terrible.
At 431.
I'm just saying, like, obviously we've had a lot of fun ripping on him over the last couple of years in the show, mainly because of Kyle. But if we were talking about, like, there's other guys on this list with a much lower FIP than ERA. Andrew Heaney is on here. Herman Marquez is on here. Savali to some degree. Like, we would be making a bigger deal out of it, and we just didn't do it. You know?
You're using him? Is that what you're getting at?
Saying eight innings on Friday night. Now he's facing Scherzer. That's a problem. But facing that Washington lineup, it basically has Trey Turner and Soto and nothing else. So, yeah, I would use him. Now, am I using him over Taijuan Walker against Baltimore? No. Walker against Baltimore, I would go with first. But, you know, who else here has a easy, like, matchup? I mean, you can't use Alcantara against the Yankees. I don't like that matchup. I don't like Kyle Wright as a starting pitcher in fantasy, even though he's facing Boston. And Boston's got a top-heavy offense. Tyler Anderson against San Diego. Well, Tatis didn't play Wednesday. Maybe he doesn't play Friday. I don't know. Maybe he's hurt. That's why he's been hitting so poorly. You know, so what options do you even like here? Brad Keller against Detroit. Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah, Brad Keller came up. Jose Urquidy is still out there in some leagues in Texas. Grades pretty well. This is the thing. Rick Porcello gets a 45 in the forecaster. That's a flat out no. And I'm going to heed the advice on that one. They give, it's my system. It gives Spencer Turnbull a league average 50 at Kansas City. That's probably a ballpark thing coming up. I would go in that direction too. I'd probably go Josh Lindblom in one of the doubleheader games. They're probably going to need him to pitch deeply in there in St. Louis. Yeah. Jay Happ against Miami.
All right, let's look at Saturday now. Do you see anything here? I guess now Philly could be eliminated. So Ryan Yarbrough by then. I'm assuming Philadelphia would be eliminated by then, the way they're playing. Ryan Yarbrough would be a good guy to get there. Dane Dunning against the Cubs. Dunning might be available in your league. Again, Cubs, no Chris Bryant. And Javier Baez having a terrible season. I mean, how are the Cubs going to win a playoff series? I mean, unless Darvish only starts once. You know, I don't know. I could watch them win the World Series now.
It depends on the draw, I think, a lot with the Cubs. By the way, one wrinkle to this weekend, especially as we get to Saturday, is as teams clinch or have their fate decided, it is very commonplace, at least in past years, for teams to rest the entirety of the offense. Now, as you pointed out on the last show, we don't have the rosters in which to do that a great deal, but I do think that's going to happen a little bit. So good point on Philly.
Well, I mean, like, if you want Mickey Moniak's 20 at-bats this weekend, go for it, but I don't think he's going to hit much. So it's like, yeah, we kind of have an idea which teams might be switching out their offenses, but who's sitting on a bench that's so good? Like, I'm looking around at some of
the pitchers. I'm talking the pitcher matchups.
Okay, that's fair. The other thing is, like I could see a team like, All right, so Saturday, who's that pitcher that's Tony Gonsolin could be the number three starter for the Dodgers. He's not pitching more than three innings on Saturday anyway. If I'm trying to think who could already be qualified for the playoffs, Lance McCullers is a great example of this. He's at Texas on Saturday night, and we love McCullers. He's pitched well lately. But he's the number two starter for Houston in the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. So, you know, why they don't care what their seed is right now. And it's not a good one. So why wouldn't they just have McCullers go three innings in like a warm-up, you know?
They could go with Greinke or Keady and McCullers based on the day's rest. If they have to push McCullers in that game, they have ways they could get around it. But to your point, I think that that's going to – that could very well change by the time we get to Saturday. The one for me that stood out on Saturday was and this is a likely assignment, Matt Shoemaker against Baltimore.
I mean, Sunday, like, you know, Brady Singer is going to get a chance to throw 100 pitches against Detroit. He could throw a shutout in this game. Like, there's no playoffs there. So why not let Brady Singer go all out?
Yeah. It wasn't great his last outing, but I'm still on board with that as a good matchup.
Drew Smyly of San Francisco, they're going to need that game. I don't think they'll be eliminated by then, and I think they'll need it. He's against San Diego. Who knows what Padre lineup is?
They're fluid with the rotation. Especially with the doubleheader. That's the only concern I have there.
Austin Voth having with an ERA of 7.17 entering Tuesday, and he throws a complete game against the Phillies. He's pitching against the Mets on Sunday, and both those teams will be eliminated by then. One already is. Who else here? Kyle Freeland at Arizona, not a strikeout guy, but and Caleb Smith is a strikeout guy, but I doubt he's going deep into that game because he just throws way too many pitches.
Who would you rather have?
At Atlanta. Give me Nick Pivetta's line for Sunday because we talked so much about him on the last show, and you were right.
Not knowing the makeup of the Atlanta lineup, this could shift, but I'll go with he. I think in this one, he's only going something like 4 1/3, and he might give up very well 3 or 4 runs. I don't think this is going to be as pretty as the other day.
We should note all games on Sunday are starting around 3 o'clock, so no Sunday night baseball. I love this. Play all the games at the same time so we can see San Francisco and. You know, St. Louis and Milwaukee and maybe Philly and see who makes that last playoff spot. I think that's a lot of fun to do it that way. So I applaud baseball for doing that right. All right, so let's morph now from starting pitching this weekend to starting pitching next season. And let me get your thoughts on the column that I wrote on Wednesday, which is my top 20 starting pitchers. I'm sure there's a lot you disagree with there. But I think your top tier is the same, DeGrom, Cole, and Bieber. What order would you have them in?
I'm still likely going with Cole, DeGrom, Bieber for next season as things stand right now. I do want to see how Cole works his way through his first October with the Yankees. And granted, it has less relevance to me because it's not going to be played very often in Yankee Stadium itself. But I still want to see how he holds up to the playoff pressure there heading into year number two.
Fair enough. Is there an obvious number four for you? I struggled a little bit with what I wanted to do with the second tier. And I've got a couple older pitchers in there, and then I've got a couple guys who don't deserve it based on their history, but we think the world of Jack Flaherty and Walker Buehler. They don't really deserve to be top five starting pitchers, I don't think. If you project ahead, I guess so, but they didn't do it this year. Mm-hmm. You know, like – Buehler did not have a great season, and Flaherty definitely did not have a great season. And there's reasons why that could have happened, whether it's COVID-related or Dodger-related, frankly. But do you have a clear next group of starting pitchers that you trust for drafts for next year?
No, it's very much a tier, like the expansive amount you provided here, which was 7 pitchers in tier 2. I think that is about right. I could expand it to 8. I could shrink it to 6. Regardless, if we're going to quibble over individual guys, you had Lucas Giolito at the head of Tier 3. I would probably make the case for him in Tier 2. If you have Lance Lynn in it, I would argue that Giolito probably deserves to be in that. I want to see where Trevor Bauer ends up. He is one who I think could have a very variable ranking in this group. But as you mentioned, the veteran players, the Darvishes, the Max Scherzers, the Clayton Kershaws versus the known young guys like Buehler, Flaherty, Clevinger even. I'm not sure which direction to go. My gut tells me that Jack Flaherty is probably going to be my number four guy. I still very much believe in the stuff. Thought he was largely unlucky this year.
Yeah, I could see that. I have Buehler and Flaherty next. What do you do with, there's a couple like obvious names here, and what do you do with them? Corbin Burnes, I don't think he's going to win the NL Cy Young Award. And part of his numbers, he hasn't faced a good offense. He's faced one good offense, the Twins. The rest of it is all like Pittsburgh and dumpy offenses. But he dominated. Does Corbin Burns make your top 20?
Probably not. There are a couple other things at play there. One is that is a terrible ballpark to call your home. Over 162 game schedule, I think that's going to have more wear and tear on him in a full season. The other thing, I'm not sure about the workload. I'm not sure this is a 200 inning guy yet. I mean, if you look at the history, he threw 71 in the third innings in 2019. He threw 116 in 2018. Aren't we probably looking at 175 for Corbin Burns in 2021?
I could see that, but also, like, if you ask me who's the next Shane Bieber, couldn't Burns be that with the strikeouts?
The leap forward, I see your point. I don't think they're anywhere near the same style of pitcher. I love his swing and miss stuff. I mean, his breaking pitches are just fantastic. I'm not sure it's going to happen over 162. I feel like there's going to be some bumps and wrong turns and difficulty holding up over the course of the year. That'll be the guy that I love to have at the beginning of the year and probably cash in at a top 10 valuation in July.
By ranking him the number 20 starting pitcher, it doesn't mean I would make him the number 20. It just means I might take the chance because Sonny Gray is safer. Brandon Woodruff, Zach Gallen, they feel safer to me. But there's upside with Burns that I thought the other guys I feel have already reached their upside, and Corbin Burns may not have done that yet. So I think if I could do it again, I might put Gray, Woodruff, or Gallen in there over Burns, but it was close.
Actually, this could be just strategic writing. I like the idea of getting the mention because he warrants the mention. Does that come into play in your rankings?
Yeah, I think to some degree, like take a shot. I did the same thing with my closer rankings for Thursday's blog. The same thing. Like I want to get a name or two in there you're not thinking about. I give credit to Corbin Burns. He won people leagues this season. I mean, he's a top five starting pitcher on the player rater and in points leagues, roto and points. He's monster year. Yeah.
And I mean, that's a guy that pretty much nobody drafted. Certainly not in ESPN leagues. I would have bet that his draft percentage was something like 2%. So yeah, while we're on the topic, I'm going to challenge.
I took him in tout mixed. I took him at my reserve in tout mixed.
Nice. So he's made
second place.
A second place. Oh,
I finished. I guess, you know, something crazy could happen, but I'm finishing in second place in that league. So
I want to ask you about two members of your top 20 here that I question a little bit.
Sure.
Blake Snell and Steven Strasburg.
Yeah. You know what? I struggled with Strasburg. I just don't want to forget about him is my point.
Yep.
Like this is a nerve issue that he had surgically repaired and he was definitely a top 20 starting pitcher in 2019 and he threw a ton of innings. So why can't he get back to that? I think this is a fair spot for him at the back end of the top 20 because I think Washington will be good again next year. I have Scherzer in my top 10. I think Strasburg's legitimate for there. Could you make the case for all these right-handers, Gray and Gallen and Charlie Morton? Charlie Morton's just as old. So I thought about that, but I do think
Morton
Strasburg bounces back.
Morton might
Is
well
Morton going to retire?
He's whispered about that. And I'll tell you this, if the Rays do come down with a World Series title here, if they bring them up, then he's retiring. I would bet.
What is your concern with Snell? I mean, it's a high whip, but he doesn't go deep into games. But I'm not sure that that's not the truncated season. I wonder if like next year he'd be allowed to throw more pitches per outing.
I'm bothered by the volume over the course of his career. This is not. I mean, yes, okay, he had the great 2018. Even then, it was 180 and two thirds innings. That's not super great from an innings standpoint. And it's 129 in the third and 107 in the other. And by the way, when you're throwing 50 innings and 11 starts, there's a volume question. Can it not be said here that these are the two who will finish lowest in the total innings pitched category next year? Of your top 20, don't you think they are 19 and 20?
Yeah, probably, but I also don't like to assume things like that. Strasburg got over 200 innings last year, if memory serves. So I'm not sure why he just can't get back to that. It's like he's going to be ready to pitch by spring training. This is not like a long-term thing. This is not Chris Sale, who was missing April and May. I did not rank Sale in my top 20 or even under consideration. But Strasburg got 209 innings last year, so I don't know why he can't get back to that. That's I guess that's my point.
I don't think you're overranking them. I just, those are two who I'm a little concerned about, and I'm kind of glad to see that they're in tier 4 and 15 or lower for you.
Is there anybody I missed that you would have put in there? Paddock, Sixto, anybody else?
I really want to give you the case for Zach Gallen. I need to see the makeup of the Diamondbacks. Yes, wins are going to come into play. How many innings they allow him over the course of a full season. You know I'm a big fan of him. He's got great stuff. Very consistent. I mean, Kyle's great trivia question, you know, related to Zach Gallen tells you a lot about his start over start potential.
Does Dylan Bundy deserve mention here?
No. By the way, he's regressed in the past two starts. I've watched the entirety of his past two starts. That's Dylan Bundy, the Baltimore Oriole.
Ever so briefly, let's get to some closers here and talk about that for next year, because that's Thursday's blog for me. And frankly, I think it was kind of easy at the top tier, the obvious guys, Hendricks and Hader. And then Aroldis is kind of his own second tier. I struggled with guys that I think are reliable. Edwin Diaz is not reliable. Trevor Rosenthal, not reliable. They should be top 10 closers, but your thoughts on that ever so briefly.
Yeah, I think it's another case of you having the right guys high on these ranks. It's just you could nitpick almost every member of a closer ranking list. Hader with the home runs, you know I have him in a key sim league, and he's given up 20 home runs in the sim league. That tells you a lot about the risk nature of Josh Hader. Had a great set of men working behind him. Brad Hand, where does James Karinchak come into play there?
It depends where Brad Hand goes.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, exactly where does Hand fill in next year is a little bit up in the air to me. Tampa Bay's complete committee. By the way, it's now 12 different pitchers have a save for them in a 60-game season.
They tied the record. Yeah.
12? I thought it was 13.
Oh, well, maybe it is. I'll look.
It's a lot, I remember.
But still, Nick Anderson should be a top 10 closer in our rankings.
If he's treated like this over 162, should he? Because I'm usually the one making that case. You're not.
If he's going to strike out 100 batters with an 060 ERA, then yes. I don't care if he gets only 20 saves.
Did get hurt. Does that bother?
A lot of these guys get hurt.
Brad Hand hasn't gotten hurt. Edwin Diaz hasn't gotten hurt. Trevor Rosenthal hasn't gotten hurt.
No, but these guys hurt your teams in recent seasons. I mean, Edwin Diaz hurt you so bad in 2019. I wish he was off my roster. I guess, there's no right answers here. I do want to bring up this, though. Devin Williams in Milwaukee is ranked higher on the player radar than Josh Hader, despite not having saves. Mm-hmm. If Milwaukee tells you in February that Williams and Hader will split the closer role, we've got two top 10 closers here in fantasy.
Yes. And that's because they would likely both fall into roughly 20 saves. And that is going to drive the player rate evaluation. And by the way, in our game with the daily transactions, I continue to say you are doing it wrong if you are not loading up on relief pitchers you can play on the day you don't have starters.
Trevor Rosenthal, top 10 closer, right? Even if he leaves San Diego, he's going to close somewhere.
That's the
Philly thing. Philly gives him $50 million a year. He closes there. Although if he goes to Philly, he'll be bad. That's the thing. The good relievers go to Philadelphia and then they stink all of a sudden.
Right. If he goes to Philly, then he's going to have that curse, and I'll rank him 375th. So, you've already warned me. Now, the Padre thing with Trevor Rosenthal is I'd like to throw you the contrast of Trevor Rosenthal versus Kirby Yates, the guy who started in the closer role.
I think Rosenthal leaves San Diego so he can close elsewhere, because Yates did not have Tommy John. This was just loose bodies in his elbow. We've all had that. He'll be fine. He's probably fine now. So I think Yates does return to closing, and I want to rank Yates as a top 10 closer, but I can't do it as long as Rosenthal and Pomerantz are still there. Pomerantz still hasn't allowed a run all year.
Yeah, Pomerantz is a dual eligible. I'm loving having him in a league where I have starting pitcher spots. I throw him in anytime I don't have my starters. Loving it.
Anyway,
I'm not with you on Yates, though. I am scared. That might be one of the most important health situations to monitor throughout the offseason is Kirby Yates.
In a general sense, now this is different for Roto and for points. Where do you, if we assume that Devin Williams and Pomeranz and Karinchak are not closers, are they borderline top 10 relief pitchers in a roto league for you or a points league or neither?
They're more so in a points league. They still are, for the most part, in a roto league. I will typically throw the 2 to 3 elite guys in the 15 to 25, actually maybe even 15 to 20 range in my rankings for the head-to-head roto categories, which is almost exactly the same outlook I'd have for just a traditional roto without the head-to-head. But I go all in the points leagues. Again, you should really be manipulating your daily matchups as much as possible, especially in the points leagues.
Well, if it's a weekly, that's a little bit different. But yes, in a daily, of course you want to do that.
But our game standard is the daily.
Right, and AJ Mass covers points leagues for us, and he will end up with 7 closers in a normal draft while you and me are fighting to get our third one.
I'm 100% with AJ with that.
Any final thoughts here on closers for next season? Kenley Jansen, by default, had to be in my top 10, even though I was scared to death. Craig Kimbrell was not in my top 20. I don't know who closes for the Cubs next year. I think there are some relievers that aren't closing right now that are closing next year. I don't want to give everything away, but Atlanta is one of them. The Dodgers' current setup man is going to find work as a closer next year. I don't want to use a top. Are you more or less likely to use a top 100 pick on one of the top closers next year? Hendricks, Chapman, Hand, Hader, or are you like me? You're waiting to the middle rounds and hoping for the best that Melanson gets 30.
I am probably more likely to get a closer within the top 100 because I think there are going to be more people who want to take your approach of don't overpay for the closer. And the guy who has a 70th overall valuation will fall to 95, and I will happily scoop him up. It's going to be largely like quarterback, except the difference is there isn't the depth at closer that there is at quarterback. They're nothing the same anymore.
Fair enough. Let's bring in our boy Kyle here and talk about trivia and some hash browns. And we're planning to do one more show after this, after the regular season ends. This is a regular season. It'll probably be on Monday afternoon, so you can listen on Tuesday. And that'll wrap things up for the 2020 campaign. And after that, I have no idea. And I guess on Monday's show, we can talk about our top 10s, where Trout ends up, because that's interesting. It's interesting stuff. Kyle, so who's got trivia today? Is it Kyle or Tristan?
I defer.
Well, I have a big surprise for you. I have trivia that Eric won't know.
You are crazy man.
I am. I love it. All right. So you know our good friend Byron Buxton, a very popular name for you and I to talk about. You know what he has in terms of on-base percentage. He has a .276. He has a slugging percentage of .610. He has a .610 slugging and a .276 on-base percentage. And what I would like you to answer for me today is, what player holds the record for worst on-base percentage with a .600 slugging? And his on-base percentage, was .319. Qualified players, and you know the season. You should be able to answer.
So Buxton's going to break the record.
No, because he will not qualify. He has no chance.
Well, he's obviously not qualifying over a 6-month season, but he's qualifying over this season,
no,
isn't
not.
He?
He has no chance of qualifying.
He's not going to do that either?
No chance.
Nope.
Won't come
no
close.
Chance. Okay. All right.
That's the record. Negative. No, okay. He's got 127 PAs. He can't get to the number. I will tell you, the record will be broken this year.
Oh, so there is somebody this year that's going to have a lower, that's going to slug 600, probably 10 guys.
Actually, no, okay, it's going to be close between these two, but there is a very good chance the record's being broken by somebody else, and you can name that guy if you want at the end.
I'm trying, Gary Sanchez probably. I'm trying to think of somebody who's slugging great. I'm not going to get this answer, but I'm trying to think of somebody for this year.
The question is all time. Who had the lowest on-base percentage? It was .319 in a year. He slugged .607. He qualified for the batting title. That was the lowest on-base percentage with a .600 slugging. And it is a memorable year.
A memorable year.
This, you know the season. You remember this player.
I remember every season. Dave Kingman. It's not Schmitty. No Phillies. Couldn't be any Phillies. All right.
That'd just be torture if you put a Philly in here and you couldn't get it.
Von Hayes.
That would just It's not. It's don't even. Hey, he got on base. Von Hayes got on base, man.
Yeah.
He always got on base. Kyle, I'm sure we have a couple hash browns. We'll get to a little bit more of them on Monday's show. But what do you? So send your hash browns in. Kyle will get them. What do you got for? What do you got for us?
Nicholas wants to know if Francisco Lindor is a first rounder next season.
My gut says no, but until I actually do my top 10, I can't actually say no. And I'm going to do my top 10 probably tomorrow for Friday.
Are you giving him an IOU on this?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of being honest. Like, until you actually sit down and do these rankings.
Ranking's tough.
Because, like, all the guys we mentioned in our last argument about the top 10, like, we forgot Soto on that show somehow, which is embarrassing. And,
we didn't really do it in a thorough top 10, though. We weren't locking in the 10 guys. We were talking about individuals.
We were talking about – right, and we were talking about the number one pick and how he definitely has Trout and I definitely do not. And Soto should have been mentioned there. So, to me, there's like six or seven obvious guys, and Lindor's not one of them. But that doesn't mean he doesn't get into my top 10. I also haven't decided yet whether I want to put DeGrom or Cole in my top 10. I think they may not make it. If push came to shove, I'm probably taking Lindor over DeGrom. So I think Lindor will make my top 10. Tristan, what say you?
I think he's going to make my top 10 as well. When I do a quick look through the underlying metrics, it doesn't look like a lot has changed. And I suspect the uncertain future is having an adverse impact on him. So
Let's not try to guess at mentality. But like, if you're taking a Cleveland infielder, you have to take Jose Ramirez over Francisco Lindor next year.
I don't think that.
Tell me you can't.
I don't think that's necessarily a slim.
He has twice as many home runs, twice as many stolen bases, a higher batting average, and a lot more runs.
Congratulations, you won last year.
So you don't think that's sustainable?
When I go through, I haven't sat here and broken down the two of them against each other. It's going to be very close between them, but I'm not going to just completely fade Francisco Lindor over a 60-game poor year.
Did I fade him? No. I have him number 10, Tristan.
Well, you're telling me I can't even guess at the mentality. We talk about Nick Castellanos all the time. He's got a new deal in Cincinnati, and now he's great.
I'm saying I don't know what's in his head. And if you're saying that Lindor had a bad season because he's worried about his contract, I don't buy it.
It's possible.
I mean, they're humans. Anything's possible. But Jose Ramirez is having an MVP season. He's the number one hitter on the player radar. And you'll say, yes, he only did it this year. Well, he also had a 39 homer, 34 steal season 2 years ago. So I think he's a legit first-round pick. I think right now, if I had to choose, I would take Ramirez over Lindor and feel okay about it. Now, I may rank them 9 and 10 consecutively, but I feel like Ramirez has to be in the first round. I don't feel like Lindor has to be.
But you're trying to take teammates on a turn?
Has to be. The more I look at Ramirez,
How is Ramirez not a first-round pick? I see what you're saying, but even if you look at three-year numbers, he runs all the time. He runs every year. He hits for power. He had one bad half season in batting average. He batted .321 after the All-Star break last year. So he had just had a bad 2.5 months last year in batting average. That was all BABIP. All right. That's a good – you know what? That's another good debate. I don't want to argue here. I think they're both great. And you can make
kind of a bad calendar year, by the way. If you go All-Star break to All-Star break, it was pretty darn horrible.
Well, he wasn't horrible this year.
No, he wasn't. The volatility year over year of Ramirez is the only thing that makes me hold back from declaring him a first round pick. But you're right. He makes a really compelling case. I think we're going to come down to our rankings and I could see them being 11, 12. And isn't that close enough?
Okay. No, it is. And frankly, we should say top 10 hitters as opposed to top 10 overall, because DeGrom and Cole have to be in there probably. But let's move on. Next.
Bill wants to know who you got in 2021, Yastrzemski or Kane?
Kane.
Lorenzo, I assume.
Assuming Lorenzo, yeah.
I don't know. Is either of them a top 40 outfielder in our rankings next year? I don't think Yastrzemski is. And Lorenzo Kane, let's give him a break. He opted out all right, this year. Last year, 11 homers, 18 steals, 260. That doesn't get it done. He's going to be 35 years old. I say neither make the top 40 outfielders, which means they're both kind of like borderline draftable, aren't they? I'm not trying to be mean.
They might both be draftable, but that's when you get down to your fifth outfielder spot and you might just want to go with a gut call instead.
I think it's Kane because I lean towards steals with some power. Right, yeah. I just don't – Yastrzemski's – I don't know. If he's a 20 home run guy who bats 270, I can get that off free agency. So if Kane's a 25 steal guy who bats 270, I can't if he's hitting 12 home runs. So it's a little bit different.
All right. Brian needs one for a keeper league in 2021 that counts quality starts. Lizardo or Burns? You can give us a preview of both, regardless of who you got.
I think it has to be Burns. And what he did this season is incredible. I understand he didn't face the best competition, but I mean those are numbers. Lizardo, he's been fine. It's a strikeout per inning. ERA and WHIP are fine. They're not awesome, but they're fine. I watched a couple of his outings, and he didn't have a lot of walks this season, but he didn't seem to throw a lot of strike. Like he got strikeouts on bad pitches. I don't know. Lizardo probably deserves just as much look as Burns in the top 30 starting pitchers. I mean, Burns probably should not have been in my top 20. I granted, with a day to look back at that, I shouldn't have done that.
I like it. I would defend that quite a while, I'll tell you.
You have to take Burns over Lizardo in a keeper, don't you?
In a keeper? Give me the age on Burns again. Either you have it.
I mean, Lizardo is 22.
That's the thing. Burns is 25.
Right.
I don't think that's a slam dunk. Okay, and I also don't think it's a slam dunk for next year. I think I'll be sitting down and looking closer at Lizardo and trying to decide where ultimately I have him. But I think that's closer than you're declaring him.
By the way, you know what? In a keeper dynasty format, if one guy's 22 and one's 25, I don't care. That's not even a tiebreaker for me. If one guy's 32 and one guy's 35, that is. But to me, the difference in 22 and 25, I look at the 25-year-old as being closer to his prime, and all pitchers' elbows can break today. So I know you might disagree with that, but I don't care that Lizardo is 3 years younger than a keeper league because neither one of them could be around at 30 years old. So it's not like the Darvish argument the other day. This is a little bit different. I don't care that Burns is 3 years older.
Yeah, no, and it's a valid point, and I can't even make the Lizardo has more durability case, which I would try to do. I can't really do that. I do think he's a little bit more likely to throw more innings of the two of them next year. But
Next year.
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, I'm just a Lizardo fan. This is a guy who's got four good pitches and he divides it up pretty evenly between them. That's a lot of options for a pitcher.
I agree. If Burns wasn't doing this, then I wouldn't be saying Burns over Lizardo. I love Lizardo. Lizardo's going to probably make my top 30. I think he has to make my top 30 starting pitchers. Okay, sorry. What's next?
No, I was just asking if both were top 30 next year, and it sounds like they are. Justin wants to know, Yon Mankata, future, does it look more like 2019 or 2020?
What a mess, huh?
And yeah.
The thing is, he had the virus, and he's blaming his season on that, and I can't say that's not true. But I'll tell you what, he wasn't batting .315 again anyway. Like, when I looked at Mankata, yes, he did great work on cutting down that strikeout rate. I think he led the majors of strikeouts in 2018. But, I was not projecting a .315. I was projecting, like, a .280 batting average with 25 homers and 10 steals. He's not the stolen base guy we thought he was going to be. I will probably project .270 with 25 homers and 10 steals next year. So only a drop in batting average. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, yeah. You're regressing the batting average, which is what we would have done this year. So effectively, you and I will probably throw the 2020 full-year projection at his 2021, and I think that's the right outcome. And I will give him a break over having COVID-19 on here because I do hear people say that it's difficult to come back from in terms of being physically fit. I'll cut him the break on that statistically.
I mean, like Freddie Freeman might win the NL MVP, and he had it. But then you got Mankata with a terrible year, and he's batting like .150 in the past month. Scott Kingery is awful right now, but he had the virus, so I don't know what to make. Kingery, I would definitely throw a last round pick on next year. I think Moncada might miss my top 100, but if he does, it wouldn't be by much. He should be my top 100.
The majority of players who had it, by the way, have not had great years. We do not know enough about the virus itself to be able to make that judgment, but do know it has an impact on people. And do you think these players are going to tell us, hey, I've been playing at 71% all year?
Of course not, and they shouldn't. I wouldn't tell anybody a darn thing.
Right, but I
haven't even told my softball team I broke a rib. I mean, I wouldn't tell anybody anything. I've only told you guys. Oh, my God. I just okay, next.
Do we have 7 seconds next. To beep that?
Can you edit?
I'll go back and keep it out there.
That's fine.
Aaron's got our last question, kind of piggybacking on that question. He wants to know who your favorite post-hype sleeper is for 2021.
Wander Franco and Mackenzie Gore. Because you know what? They're not going to get rankings that they would have if they had come up and done what Alec Bohm and, you know, the other great rookies did. I don't know. Post-type sleeper. So it's got to be somebody who had a bet. Moncada and Kingery certainly
2017, 2018 era who've not really done it yet. I mean, like Vlad Guerrero in the discussion the other day is – getting closer,
yeah,
but I don't think even he fits it. Gosh.
I should have prepped. Jared Walsh passed that because he's homered every day.
And Frazier passed it probably.
Ian Happ, he passed it this season. Verdugo passed it.
Yeah, I should have looked at that one first.
I mean, I don't want to say, Austin Riley, no, because I'm not on board. And Buxton?
I think there's still too much hype for Byron. Yeah, the hype's got to be gone.
I mean, I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. In normal seasons, I look at like the last month of the season, September, and see who did well and who did not, and try to figure out what I think it means. I'm not doing that this year. You know, this winter, that's for darn sure. Post-type sleeper. I guess Gavin Lux might fit, right?
Yeah, I was actually thinking of his teammate, Dustin May.
You know what? I watched Dustin May on Tuesday. He does not get strikeouts. He can't put hitters away.
He should have the stuff to do it.
I really think Gonsolin might be better. I think Tony Gonsolin might be better for fantasy in 2021. That's going to make so many people mad. But Gonsolin is a strikeout guy, and I don't – do you realize that Dustin May has the same as a lower K rate than Marco Gonzalez? Yeah. I mean, by a lot.
I know.
People love Dustin May. I'm not sure they should.
That's why I'm thinking that a lot of people are going to be shying from him next year. I do think he has the stuff to improve in that department, but it's a huge jump he has to make.
I mean, Nate Pearson of Toronto, Spencer Howard of Philly, I thought they'd be great this year. They weren't, but injuries played a role. I think they're going to be really good next season. They're going to be in their rotations, that's for sure.
I want to see.
But I guess I guess that was a decent amount of
the case for Tyler O'Neill?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can.
I'm not blown away. A quick look at the metrics, I'm not blown away.
I don't like what I've seen out of him. So, you know, I mean, Dylan Carlson, I still think will be great, even though he's had a terrible season in the majors.
Yeah, yeah.
Dylan Carlson and Gavin Lux are two hitters to get in 2021.
There you go.
All right. I have no clue on your trivia question.
Throw the hint.
You say I should know the season. I don't even know what that means.
So let's get into this one. We were talking about Byron Buxton and the fact that he has a 600-plus slugging percentage and a sub-300 on-base percentage, which has never happened. The closest it ever came to happening was when a certain player slugged 607 and had a 319 on-base percentage. That's the record for lowest on-base OBP, and I'd like you to name it. And the hint for you is this did happen during the Roto era, and this player was subsequently a manager who, by the way, won the Manager of the Year 20 years after this happened.
What?
He was the Manager of the Year 20 years after the record-setting in this case season.
Mattingly.
You're already giving him the Manager of the Year?
I think he might actually win
this year. I think he might too.
But if he gets that team into the playoffs, man, I got to be honest. I pay so little attention to Manager of the Year awards. I really don't. Because, like, I think it's a popularity contest in some ways. I'm trying to think of I'm trying to look at managers. Like, who could it even be? A manager that was that good as a hitter. Oh, not Charlie Manuel. He didn't qualify.
Are you looking up your list? Kyle, you got a guess?
I'm looking up the current managers, and I can't think of
a notable season and a notable player. And he was a subsequent manager who won the Manager of the Year. And his tenure as a manager ended in a way you certainly would recall. You'd certainly recall.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
So it's a Philly.
Not necessarily. You just are very familiar with the tale. And one of the players on the team that probably helped contribute to them moving on with managers.
Okay. I'm at a loss. I'm trying to think. I mean, it's obviously something Phillies related. Not Dusty Baker, not Don Baylor. I don't even know who these guys were managers
Dusty
of the
Baker
year.
Baker had some ties to this guy, I believe.
Okay. I don't know. We're just wasting time. I'm trying. Who was a good, like, most managers were not good. La Russa never hit. Like, I mean, it can't be Joe Torre.
Dusty Baker replaced this guy.
Davey Johnson? No. I don't know. Who is it? Roger Craig?
No, but Roger Craig was his manager at one point. The answer is Matt Williams in 1994.
Oh, the strike year where he was going to break the home run record. Matt Williams. That's really good. I should have gotten.
And you recall?
He was a terrible manager.
You recall how that went down at the end?
How what went down? You mean Matt Williams losing his job? I don't recall. What
happened?
That was
the Papelbon year.
Oh, and you just said that name. We don't say that name on this show. You're off the show.
Yes,
you were going to host it.
My goal.
Nikki Pivetta, you were going to host, and now you said the name.
I get vacation on
we
Monday.
Don't say that name. So it'll be me and Kyle on Monday's show.
Come on, guys. I'll see you later.
All right. Tristan's being sent to the alternate site. All right. Matt Williams is a good – that's pretty good, pretty darn good. I wasn't even thinking strike year because I qualified players. But
Year, there are five guys who have slugging at least 250 points above the on-base, and they are Luke Voit, Jose Abreu, Teoscar Hernandez, Adam Duvall, and Will Myers.
Yeah, I knew Duvall, and I knew Myers. He's not
Duvall's
getting
the one who had
but you know
the
what?
Record that I was talking about, beating Matt Williams.
For some reason, like, nobody cares about on-base percentage anymore. That's the most important thing, not hitting a home run, but I guess it isn't. All right, we're done for today. Thank you so much for listening to our little fantasy-focused baseball. I think we got only one more left. We'll see if we get that one. But anyway, have a great weekend and best of luck in your fantasy leagues. Tristan, can you still win any of your leagues?
Yes, actually. But they're not the ones I expected. That's the weird part.
They never are. I am, I think, a half point up in NL labor, but I know how that's going to end. I already know. I that's not being pessimistic. I already know. There's no way I'm winning that league. There's no way. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to our show. We'll try to do one more on Monday night for Tuesday distribution. For Tristan and Kyle, I'm Eric. Have an awesome weekend.